Welcome to the deep dive. If you're joining us right now, you probably know that feeling of like getting behind the wheel of a really high-performance car.
Oh, absolutely. Just that sense of absolute control.
Right. You look down at the dashboard and you glance at the speedometer and it says you're cruising at, 80 miles an hour.
Which is a great feeling.
It is. You're
Yeah.
blowing past everyone on the highway. It feels fast. It feels incredibly efficient. And honestly, you feel like you are just winning the race.
Yeah, because the speedometer offers this really definitive number, right? It's a very comforting
Right,
metric.
yeah.
It gives you that immediate feedback that, hey, you are moving rapidly in the right direction.
But consider what that speedometer completely fails to tell you. Like, it doesn't tell you that your parking brake is secretly engaged the whole time.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
It doesn't tell you that your transmission is, like, stuck in second gear. And it definitely doesn't tell you that your engine is burning through a full tank of gas every 20 miles just to maintain that speed.
Right, so you're moving fast, but.
You are undeniably moving fast, but you are systematically destroying the vehicle to pull it off.
Which is just the perfect visualization for the danger of relying on a single superficial metric to gauge success.
Exactly.
Because, in business, we are so drawn to simple numbers, they validate our decisions quickly.
Yeah, we want the quick win.
But that psychological comfort, it can completely blind an investor or even an executive to these deep structural failures that are just occurring right beneath the
Okay,
surface.
let's unpack this, because the core of our deep dive today revolves around a strategic guide we have titled ROI versus ROIC.
Right.
And if you've spent, I don't know, even 5 minutes reading about corporate strategy or personal finance or venture capital, you've definitely heard the acronym ROI.
Return on investment, it's everywhere.
It is the business world speedometer. So the mission for today's deep dive is to decode these two metrics. We want to uncover why the second one, ROIC, which is return on invested capital, is actually the far superior lens for spotting real long-term value.
It really is.
And then we're going to see how this exact dynamic is playing out right now in these rapidly transforming cash-rich markets. Specifically, we'll look at Saudi Arabia's Vision 2030.
Which is a fascinating testing ground for this.
So fascinating. So let's start with our familiar baseline. Why is ROI the metric that literally everyone defaults to?
Well, ROI is the default simply because it's highly intuitive. It requires very little forensic accounting to calculate.
You don't need a math degree.
Exactly. You are simply taking the net profit of an endeavor, you divide it by the initial investment you made, and then multiply by 100 to get this clean, easy-to-read percentage.
Okay.
The strategic guide we're analyzing actually uses a very grounded example for this. So imagine you invest 100,000 Saudi rials into a short-term hospitality venture.
Like a pop-up thing.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe outfitting a boutique pop-up hotel for a big festival season. So you finish the project, you tally up the receipts, and your net profit is 30,000 rials.
Leaving you with a 30% ROI.
Right. It's a straightforward calculation. And it's incredibly easy to communicate to, say, a board of directors or a silent partner.
Because they just want the bottom line.
Precisely. For short-term, discrete investments like flipping a commercial property or running a quick 6-month pilot program for some logistics software, ROI does exactly what it is designed to do.
It's a snapshot.
It provides a quick snapshot answer to a very simple question: did this specific deal make us money?
Right. And I understand why that is so appealing, but I have to push back a little on the premise that ROI is inherently flawed just because it's simple.
Okay, let's hear it.
Well, 30% profit is 30% profit, right?
Yeah.
Like, you put capital at risk and you received a significant amount of capital back. So relying only on ROI is kind of like looking at the final score of a basketball game without knowing if it took the team three overtimes and like a totally exhausted roster to get those points. The team still won. If my bank account is noticeably bigger at the end of the day, why should I care about the underlying engine mechanics? The car got me to the destination.
I get that. But the issue arises when you try to use that same simple tool to evaluate a complex ongoing business rather than just a one-off project.
Oh, I see.
The guide outlines several major blind spots where ROI actually distorts reality. So the first major flaw is that the basic ROI formula completely ignores time.
Oh.
Generating a 20% return over 5 agonizing years of operational headaches is vastly different from generating a 20% return in a single fiscal quarter.
Because capital has an opportunity cost.
Exactly.
If my money is tied up in that boutique hotel for 5 whole years, I'm missing out on dozens of other investments I could have made during that time.
Exactly. Furthermore, ROI totally overlooks ongoing capital requirements and operational inefficiencies.
What do you mean by that?
Well, it looks at the initial seed money you planted, but it fails to measure the massive amounts of fertilizer and water and labor required to keep that crop alive.
Wow. Okay.
A company can report a stellar ROI on a new product launch, so they artificially look like a massive success, while their underlying supply chain is literally hemorrhaging cash to keep that product on the shelves.
Oh, man. So it's a headline number. It tells you the top speed, but not the strain on the engine.
Precisely.
Which means if we are trying to evaluate whether a company is actually healthy over the long haul, we need a diagnostic tool that looks under the hood.
We do. We need to look at ROIC.
Okay, so talk to me about ROIC.
So return on invested capital shifts the entire paradigm of how we measure success. Okay. It does not just ask if a specific project was profitable.
Right.
It asks a much more demanding question. How efficiently is this company utilizing absolutely all the capital it controls to generate its operating profit?
All of the capital.
Yes. And to answer that, the metric changes the inputs entirely. Instead of looking at a simple net profit, ROIC looks at net operating profit after tax, or NOPAT.
Wait, let's pause there because I want to make sure the mechanics of this are crystal clear. Why do we care about the operating profit after tax rather than just the bottom line net income we normally see on a standard income statement?
Because NOPAT strips away the noise. It removes things like one-time asset sales or the specific interest payments a company is making on its debt.
Oh, so it's isolating the core business.
Exactly. It isolates the pure core operating engine of the business. It shows us how much cash the actual day-to-day operations are generating in the real world after the government takes its share.
Okay, so NOPAT is the true power output of the engine.
Yes.
Then we have to look at what is fueling it, right? The second half of the equation.
Right. Instead of dividing by just the initial investment of a single project, ROIC divides that operating profit by the company's total invested capital.
Total invested capital.
This is a crucial concept. Invested capital includes all the equity provided by shareholders, plus all the interest-bearing debt the company has taken on.
Yeah.
It represents the total pool of resources management has been entrusted with.
Let's ground this with the Saudi logistics firm example from the source material, just so we can see the mechanism in action.
Sure.
So let's say this firm has a net operating profit after tax and NOPAT of 1.5 million reals.
Okay.
But to generate that profit, they have to maintain a massive pool of capital. Like they own a huge fleet of refrigerated trucks, they lease enormous distribution warehouses on the outskirts of Riyadh, and they operate this complex routing software.
Which all costs money.
Right. And they funded all of this through a combination of investor equity and bank loans, totaling 10 million reals in invested capital.
So you divide that 1.5 million real operating profit by the 10 million reals of total invested capital, and you arrive at an ROIC of 15%.
Okay, so here's where it gets really interesting. The guide points out this fascinating paradox that can occur when you look at these two metrics side by side.
Right, the paradox.
It states that a business can show a legitimately strong ROI on paper for its recent initiatives, but simultaneously suffer from a weak, deteriorating ROIC.
Yes.
And I want to try and puzzle this out. If they are making a massive return on a project, the only way their overall ROIC could be bad is if the rest of the business is actively dragging it down, right?
You're hitting on the fundamental difference between isolated success and systemic inefficiency.
Okay.
Let's look at the mechanics of how this happens right under the nose of management. Suppose our logistics firm decides to launch a targeted premium delivery service for medical supplies.
Okay, niche market.
Exactly. They invest specifically in that one campaign, and it is a massive hit. The ROI on that specific medical supply venture is 40%.
Wow.
Right. Management celebrates, and the team running that division looks brilliant.
But ROIC forces us to look at the other 9 million reals of capital sitting on the balance sheet.
And that is where the mechanical failure is hidden. While the medical delivery team is generating a 40% ROI, the company as a whole might be sitting on 3 empty warehouses they're still paying leases on.
Oh, geez.
Their standard trucking fleet might be suffering from terrible routing efficiency, burning excess fuel, requiring constant maintenance.
Right, right.
They might have terrible inventory management, tying up millions of lyles in spare parts that just sit on shelves gathering dust.
So the ROI is basically a spotlight shining on the one shiny successful project.
Yes.
But the ROIC turns on the overhead lights in the entire factory. exposing the fact that they are bleeding resources everywhere else.
That's a great way to put it. ROIC prevents management from hiding behind a single good decision while they mismanage the bulk of the company's resources. It measures the resilience of the entire system.
Okay, so we have our logistics firm sitting at a 15% ROIC. In a vacuum, 15 sounds like a solid number.
It does.
But going back to the car, a speedometer reading of 80 miles an hour is only good if the speed limit isn't 120.
True.
We need a benchmark to judge if 15% actually means the company is succeeding. How do we determine the ultimate test of financial health?
By determining the cost of the fuel running the engine. In finance, this is known as the weighted average cost of capital, or WACC.
WACC.
Yes. Every single rile a company uses to operate comes with a price tag attached to it.
Okay, the debt side of that is easy to understand. Like if they took out a massive loan to buy those refrigerated trucks, the bank is charging them an annual interest rate. That is a hard, unavoidable cost.
Exactly.
But what about the equity side? The money investors put in doesn't have a literal monthly interest bill attached to it.
It doesn't have a monthly bill, but it carries an implicit cost, which is actually often higher than debt.
Wait, really? How so?
Because investors take on risk by giving a company their capital. In exchange for that risk, they demand a certain rate of return. If the company cannot clear that hurdle rate, the investors will just pull their capital out and put it into a safer asset, like government bonds or a competitor's stock.
That makes sense.
So the WACC blends the cost of the bank debt with the required return of the equity investors into a single percentage.
So it is the blended average cost of simply having access to the money needed to run the business.
Precisely. Let's apply this benchmark to our logistics firm. If their ROIC is 12%, and their blended cost of capital, their WACC, is 8%, they have a positive spread.
Right.
They are taking capital that costs them 8% to acquire, running it through their operational engine, and generating a 12% return. They are genuinely creating long-term value.
But if we flip the scenario, say they aggressively expand, they buy a bunch of new trucks, they launch new software, and their revenue looks incredible.
Everyone's cheering.
Right. But because of inefficiencies, their overall ROIC actually drops to 6% against that same 8% cost of capital.
Then they are actively destroying value.
So it is essentially like going to the bank, taking out a massive personal loan at an 8% interest rate, and
putting all that borrowed money into a savings account that only yields 6%.
Exactly. Yeah. You're technically moving money around. You can show everyone your bank statement to prove you have a lot of cash. You might even boast about your total assets.
Yeah.
But the underlying mechanism is slowly bankrupting you. You are bleeding cash every single day.
What's fascinating here is how this hidden mechanism of value destruction actually explains the collapse of so many seemingly dominant companies.
Oh, really?
Yeah. A corporation can spend a decade aggressively growing its top-line revenue, capturing massive market share, and touting high ROI product launches.
The public and the press just applaud their growth.
They do. But if their operations are so bloated that their ROIC consistently sits below their cost of capital, every new expansion actually accelerates the destruction of the company's intrinsic value.
Wow.
They are literally growing themselves to death.
Which brings us to the real-world laboratory where these metrics are currently being tested under immense pressure. Because the source material spends significant time applying this framework to Saudi Arabia.
Yes, it does.
The kingdom is in the midst of Vision 2030, which is an economic transformation that is almost hard to comprehend in its scale.
It really is. We are observing the rapid, simultaneous development of entire new economic sectors from the ground up.
It's massive.
You have the construction of smart megacities like NEOM, the deployment of massive renewable energy infrastructure, a rapidly expanding domestic tourism market.
And a heavy push into global logistics and artificial intelligence and fintech.
Exactly. The volume of capital flowing into these sectors is staggering.
And this is where I want to put myself in the shoes of the listener who might be evaluating companies operating in this space, either as an investor or a partner, or even just a prospective employee.
Right.
When a market is experiencing this kind of historical boom, capital is abundant.
Very much so.
The government is actively incentivizing growth. They're offering grants, subsidies, and these massive contracts. When money is practically falling from the sky, it seems like any company can look like a genius. How do you avoid the hype?
Well, an abundance of capital often masks a profound lack of discipline.
Interesting.
In a hyper-growth environment fueled by external investment, the traditional ROI metric can become incredibly misleading.
Walk me through the mechanics of that. How could a company in this environment use the hype to mask a failing engine? Let's take a hypothetical renewable energy tech firm operating in one of these new smart cities.
Okay, imagine this firm launches a pilot program deploying a new array of automated solar panels.
Sounds great.
The Saudi government, as part of Vision 2030's sustainability goals, might offer a massive subsidy that covers 60% of the initial hardware costs for this pilot.
Right.
When the firm calculates the ROI of this specific project, the initial investment line on their spreadsheet is artificially tiny because the subsidy covered the bulk of it.
Oh, I see where this is going.
Consequently, the ROI looks astronomical. They might report a 60 or 70% return on their investment.
The speedometer says they're going 120 miles an hour.
Exactly. Investors see that number, they assume the management team has created a revolutionary business model, and they just pour equity into the firm.
But the subsidy is essentially a steep downhill slope on the highway. Gravity is doing all the work, not the engine.
That is a perfect analogy, because when you apply ROIC to the same solar firm, the illusion shatters.
Okay, how so?
ROIC requires you to look at the total invested capital required to maintain the operations, regardless of who paid for the initial hardware.
Right.
So, it turns out these automated panels break down constantly in the desert heat. The firm has to employ a massive, highly paid engineering team to perform constant maintenance.
Oh, man.
Their supply chain for replacement parts is incredibly inefficient, requiring expensive air freight.
So when you look at the total pool of capital tied up in the business, and you compare it to the actual operating profit they generate after those massive maintenance expenses, their ROIC might be like 4%.
And if their cost of capital, their WACC is 9%.
You're destroying value at a rapid pace.
Exactly. ROIC acts as an unforgiving filter. It strips away the momentum of the market hype, it neutralizes the distortion of the subsidies, and it forces a brutal examination of operational reality.
It's the truth serum.
It really is. It asks, can this management team take a rile of capital, put it through their specific business model, and efficiently turn it into a profit over and over again without external help?
It differentiates between a company riding a temporary wave and a company building a structural economic moat.
Right.
Because when the massive infrastructure grants eventually slow down and that steep downhill slope levels out into a flat road, only the companies with a high ROIC will have the engine power to keep moving forward.
And the ones relying on inflated ROIs will stall out immediately.
Which is why understanding the distinction between these two metrics is paramount for anyone navigating a transformative market. You just cannot rely on the momentum of the broader economy to guarantee the success of an individual business.
You really can't.
So we've dissected the mechanics, but the guide makes it explicitly clear that this isn't a mandate to abandon ROI completely, right?
Not at all.
The goal isn't to throw out the speedometer. It's to understand when to look at it and when to plug in the engine diagnostic tool.
They serve distinct complementary purposes. Don't just pick one. Use both together.
So if you are evaluating a short-term tactical decision, maybe you are buying a piece of heavy machinery for a single two-year construction contract, or you're running a limited marketing test in a new region, you use ROI.
Yes. It gives you the rapid assessment you need to make a quick tactical choice. It gauges those early stage returns perfectly.
But if you're stepping back to evaluate the long-term durability of an enterprise, if you were deciding whether to invest your life savings into a company's stock, or if you're comparing the structural health of two competing logistics firms to see who will survive a market downturn,
then ROIC is the only metric that reveals the truth.
So what does this all mean for you listening right now?
It means that true financial literacy isn't about memorizing complex accounting formulas. It is about knowing which questions to ask to expose the underlying reality of a situation.
Right.
When a company boasts about massive returns, your instinct should no longer be to blindly applaud. ROI gives you the headline number, but ROIC helps you figure out what's really going on behind the scenes.
You have to ask the right questions.
Exactly. Your instinct should be to ask how much capital it took to generate those returns and what that capital actually costs them. Asking those questions helps you avoid the red flags.
Yeah.
By shifting your focus from the surface level speed to the internal efficiency of the engine, you protect yourself from the illusions that trap careless investors.
You learn to look past the shiny dashboard. We have firmly established that ROIC is the ultimate test of an efficient, value-creating machine. But I want to leave you with one final puzzle to mull over on your own.
Oh, okay.
Imagine you find a company with a genuinely stellar ROIC. Their engine is running perfectly. But think about this. What if that high ROIC is currently being driven by a temporary moat?
Interesting.
Perhaps they have exclusive access to a short-term regulatory loophole or a fleeting tech advantage that expires in 2 years. How quickly could that protective moat evaporate?
Wow, yeah.
And when it does, what happens to all that supposedly efficient capital that is suddenly trapped inside a vulnerable, obsolete machine? Something to chew on the next time you see a corporation boasting about its record-breaking, bulletproof efficiency.
It is a critical reminder that even the most efficient engine in the world cannot save a vehicle if the road it was designed for suddenly ceases to exist.
So the next time you are cruising down the highway feeling like you are absolutely winning the race, just take a second to make sure your parking brake isn't secretly engaged.